I spotted the aged Dodge Power Wagon, the one I'd seen last night, parked beside a tree over the hill.
No windows?
He pointed. There are slits under the eaves. Henry, always prepared, had taken the old Vietnam-era binoculars from inside my truck and lifted them to his eyes.
There is a rifle barrel stuck out from one of the slits.
I take it back, what I said about this being better than Artie Smallsong's fortress. I studied the structure and thought about what great targets we made standing out here.
Where's the gun? He lowered the glasses. Right corner. But it is on.
What?
The barrel is pointed slightly up.
Henry handed me the binoculars.
Think he's expecting an air raid? Or he is asleep?
He gestured with a hand.
You two go that way and I will work my way to the right and see if he moves.
Why do you get to draw fire?
I am the Indian scout.
He smiled at Gordo and then took the binoculars back and hung them around his neck. He studied his own weapon, nudging the button and then quoting the old maxim of gun safety.
Red means dead. I am the one who shoved him in a locker, so he is most likely to shoot at me.
Sound logic. The Cheyenne Nation made his way to the right, Gordo and I starting off to our left. Since when did the bear start liking shotguns? Since he liberated that one from Artie Smallsong's armory. It was propped up in a chair, booby-trapped into shooting whoever opened the door. It's also like the one Artie had down in Lodge Grass and the one he used to blow out Schiller's truck window last night. He made a face.
I missed a lot in the last 12 hours?
I nodded. It happens when you actually sleep. We made the corner and looked down the length of the building. The gun barrel hadn't moved. Gordo continued, and I followed. He stood by a metal cellar door leading down into the foundation and whispered,
"It's not locked, so he must be home."
"You want to announce our presence?" He raised an eyebrow.
"And give him another chance to shoot us?"
He could shoot Henry instead. He stooped, turned the handle, and began lifting.
"Somehow I doubt it."
"Stop!"
We both turned to see Henry standing a little way off. The bear moved in closer, stooping beside Gordo.
"Something is not right here."
Gordo carefully eased the door handle back in place and stepped to the side. There were a few downed branches behind us, and I reached back to grab one. Stepping forward, I slipped the crooked end under the handle and moved to the side with the two of them and lifted. The blast was deafening. Most of the pellets ricocheted off the metal panel, but a few embedded into its surface as we all crouched there, letting our ears work again. Gordo turned to Henry.
"I owe you one, Scout."
The bear stood and took the stick from me to pull the door the rest of the way open. Keeping the muzzle of the tactical shotgun ahead of him, he paused for a moment and then started down the steps. We followed as Henry paused at the bottom to remove the string setup connected to another slightly more conventional shotgun, duct-taped to yet another chair propped against a 55-gallon drum. There were stud walls, stapled with opaque plastic gently moving as a breeze blew in from the open doorway above. The rafters were naked. No insulation. I guess when Louis's money ran out, it really ran out.
"Doesn't he work at the mine?" "Yeah, but he's also got 3 ex-wives and a half dozen ex-children."
"Ex-children?"
He moved past me toward a dangerously wired toggle switch.
"That's what the civil visits were about."
He flipped the switch and, unsurprisingly, nothing happened.
"Looks like he couldn't pay his electric bill either."
Henry walked past us, staring down what in a finished house would be called a hallway. Gordo pulled a maglight from his belt and shone it around, the plastic reflecting the beam.
"I guess we're the only ones here."
"Maybe." I followed Henry down the hall, smelling what I was sure he had smelled, a tang in the air, a metallic odor that, in my experience, could only be one thing. There was an open doorway to the right where an army cot was pressed up against the wall, along with a heap of dirty clothes and a utility-sized trash can overflowing with refuse. Tacked to the rafter was a large Nazi flag. All in all, it was hard to envision this as the den of a superior race. Henry moved on, Gordo followed, and I brought up the rear, still smelling the familiar but unwelcome smell. We two stopped at the last doorway where the barrel of the rifle had been stuck through a coal chute, a furnace room in which piles of coal had been loaded. Cheap fuel for a guy who worked at a mine. The shovel. was still in his hand. Louis Howard was there. At least a majority of him was. Most people are fortunate enough to not see the cataclysmic effect of a shotgun blast on a body. But if you're in law enforcement, you'll see it sooner or later. People often use them for suicide, I suppose to ensure that an unsteady hand will still get the job done. But Louis hadn't committed suicide. Someone had gotten very close to him from behind and then shot him square in the back. And not too long ago, the chunk of meat and organs the double-aught buck had taken from the chest cavity was evident because someone had taken the time to roll the body over. I wondered why there was a great deal of blood on his face. Reaching down, I used the barrel of my semi-automatic to pry his lips open, the rigor holding them in a post-mortem sneer. Somebody pulled out all of his teeth.